Welcome. Just a couple of procedure on our household matters. We expected to adopt a resolution calling for the extension of the Black Administration Act, for which we will need quorum. There's only five of us here. The extension of the Black Administration Act. So sometime this morning, once we've got a quorum, we may just quickly interrupt our proceedings, G, with your permission, so that we can adopt that resolution. The second matter is that the public protector has, she was a day late, but let's not hold that against her. We had requested certain information relating to report as it relates to the Department of Justice, the Master's Office, and any other entity within the Justice family. We've received that now, and I'm told Bonani has distributed that. I've asked him to provide copies to DG, which is done. So you may want to have a look at that as well. All right. Let's see, what else do I have here? Mervyn Derolingo. Okay. Does anyone know what oneness, global oneness, is all about? Don't answer, don't answer. And then I received, honorable members, an apology, a written apology from Advocate Mamiki Shai for her absence last Friday, for what it's worth. I don't understand. She says she wasn't informed. I was not informed nor invited to be part of the presentation.
Maybe that issue could stand over to when we deal, because I remember that the public protector said she was on study leave. So let's deal with it in the complaint issue rather than...
All right, we'll do that. Honourable members, I've also distributed the draft media statement. At some point I'll need you to indicate whether you're happy with it. DG, on my way home last night, I suddenly remembered why I had felt someone wasn't here who should be here. Where is Mr. J.B. Skosana? But he wasn't here the other day. Oh, you must have read my mind. So they are just faces that you expect to be here. So Mr. Skosana is one of them. Welcome, Mr. Skosana. We miss you. all right, DG, when we finished last night or yesterday, we were engaged in a lengthy explanation about a whole lot of stuff. I suggest we carry on where we left off today.
Yesterday. I don't see that on the screen. I see IT. But I had one issue just arising from the report we finally seen on the reparation issue. This is a fun question to DG.
Or DG, I understand you were done.
Then DG said to us that she was going to come and tell us about the 18 communities I don't see a Dr. De Vier here. Oh, there he is.
No, Dr. De Vier had explained to me yesterday.
Yeah.
He's in the process of consulting with one of his colleagues to obtain the information. Once he's done that, and at the appropriate time, we'll allow them to make that presentation.
It's a very simple question now that we've got the public releases from sports. And there's obviously a lot one can say about it. I see it's a provisional report, so I'm not sure what the final one is. But I just wanted to know from the Director General, she, under remedial action, under monitoring, she wanted the department to acknowledge receipts within 2 weeks, indicate whether the recommended remedial action will be implemented, submit an action plan, inform the public sector every 3 months on the progress made. I don't know if you can just give us any, if you've got the information as to what's happening with that. Then in the remedial action, it's expedite the drafting of the regulations, which we were talking about yesterday. But under the body of the report, the explanation that we've been given, I mean, as you know, DG, I really feel that the department is taking too long. But I do understand it's complex because it's multi-departmental. In the Republic Protector's report, there's no reference to the multi-departmental aspects. Were you contacted by the public protector? Did anyone from the department give her a report on the status of the regulations?
There are 2 questions.
One and then the thing about the monitoring, how that is going.
Thank you very much. Citizen, if you don't mind, and good morning, citizen and honourable members. If you don't mind, I'll answer the question right away. I just wanted to say today we've changed the setup a bit in the team. We've moved some people back, and there are new people who are going to assist us respond to the core services program two, which we are focusing on today. Very quickly, I'm not introducing anybody, but I'm just going to introduce two people, Ms. Zanin, who I believe is known to you as well, from Regional Head Housing, and then from Ms. Kruse, from the Free State, Regional Head Free State. He takes over from the non-acting
gentleman from Kimberley.
Kimberley, yes. Thank you. Absolutely, it became difficult to continue saying the process was being now concluded. He's here and he has been with us for a little while now. Thank you. Chair, just to respond to two things, I will allow Mr. De Vier to respond to the first, to the second, which is in the finalization of regulations, did we specifically give the regulation to the public health sector?
Not the regulation, the report.
Okay.
Getting a report, asking or getting a report from the department.
Yeah. Chair, for the purposes though of being able to respond to this question, let me respond by saying I am seeing this report for the first time, so I have not had an opportunity to read it. I'm not sure how it was sent to the department. We have created a mechanism of responding to the public protector issues. We have a branch in the department that is called Court Services. It's a recently established branch, but the people who constitutional development, my apologies. The people though who are resident in that branch have been in the department for a while and are very knowledgeable on issues of the Chapter 9 institution. One of the mandates of that branch is to look after the Chapter 9 institution, and specifically since Foresight had started to say we must monitor how we respond to public prosecutor issues as well as other chapter-line institutions. We don't give that branch a specific mandate to coordinate these issues. We in January of this year already, we asked the public prosecutor to put forward a team, and a team from the Department of Justice, to look at all issues outstanding between ourselves so that we can resolve those issues. We worked on some documentation, but from their side, I am advised by that office. But from the side of the public protector, we have not received a sign off on the approval of that arrangement. So this report, I will take back to this team so that we can look at it. I will also look at it myself, but I can't comment on the content of the report because I have not had an opportunity to see it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, just to answer the question, I never signed any. I don't recall signing off any report for the public protector. I haven't studied this report carefully, but from the little that I've seen, the investigation only dealt with two officials, Mr. Farouk, I think Hussein, and Tapelo Mukusha, both of whom worked. Mr. Farouk did this with the manager, the president's fund, and Tapelo Mukusha is the deputy director in the TRC unit. I'm not aware that about that we interacted with the public protector, but I undertake to meet the public protector on this and submit action plans because I think the questions that she asked can be answered.
Really, I do think it would be useful to get to the bottom of this because it, you know, there aren't many written reports. Incidentally, to say that my complaint to her on Friday was that the report was not available on the website. I think there were only 40 reports. Was that one 40 reports or was that 14 reports? I can't remember, but not many. But I think it would be useful if we get a written response from the DG around the inaction with the public protector's office on this matter, so we can then put that to her. I mean, one of her, I was showing it to Ms. Schaefer, one of her recommendations, one of her remedial actions is that ensuring interested parties have access to information on the balance available in the fund by requesting magistrates to assist interested parties as matters request to access annual reports for scrutiny. Now, I just have this image of some magistrate and some sort of person coming to them and the magistrate having to, you know, go on the internet for them and show them, like, what's there. I mean, magistrates don't play that role, so it's a little bit bizarre. So I trust that there won't be a blanket acceptance of the remedial action.
I just think we need to maybe have some discussion at another point, not today, but as to what would be an appropriate way of dealing with issues that departments don't agree with the public sector. And maybe they should have that discussion with her as well, as to how she envisages it being done, because it's quite clear that there are some very interesting recommendations that are coming out of that.
I'm very glad you make that point, Schaefer, because it's precisely the point I wanted us to address, without wasting the department's time. We, unless it is misunderstood, I need to stress that very clearly, more for the media than anybody else, lest we are misunderstood as attacking the public protector, because that's not the intention. This committee is responsible for conducting oversight of the Office of the Public Protector. This committee is also responsible for conducting oversight of the Department of Justice and all other entities within the justice family, including Chapter 9 institution. When the public protector presents this committee with a report that shows that the Department of Justice has the most number of complaints forwarded to the public protector, it is natural for this committee to say, well, what is it all about? Because when we meet with the department, as we are doing now, we would like to engage with the department about all these complaints, because we'd like to know whether there is a problem. And I stress again, lest it is misunderstood that we are attacking the public protector, which we are not doing. We are simply doing our work, which is to ensure that everything is above board. There's nothing wrong with that. We make no apologies. So yes, Ms. Schaefer, you're perfectly correct. At some stage as a committee, we would need to figure out in our minds, how do we How do we now take this forward? How do we deal with it so that nobody feels unjustly treated? I'm glad you made that point. All right. Can we then move on, this, or do you want to still... is there more to come, Dr. DeVere? No? Right now?
Not right now, later. In the afternoon.
All right. Anyhow, we're on our call ready.
For it.
Where's Kana Piana Majake? As soon as she comes in with break, right? And right.
Today we had agreed that we are going to finalize the program one presentation. So basically there are a few issues, but which we thought, given the questions and given the conclusions of the Auditor General, we wanted to present to the Honorable Committee just to know where we are. In terms of our strategic document, we had identified our ICT, which is the information communication technology, to be one of our fundamental strategic enablers for the department, just to address two issues in that context. One, to address the improvement and the speed with which we provide services to the country, justice services that is, and secondly, to enable us to modernize our own business internally for better coordination, better reporting, better monitoring, and better evaluation of progress. So that's really why we thought this objective was very fundamental to us. In the present, we had no information communication technology strategy prior to this decision. Last year, we worked very hard to develop the ICT strategy. And before I even finalize that work, I may have to talk to the key issues that are appearing in the strategy and the reasons for that. We, you would know, already remember that in terms of our business, with the number of population of courts that we have to deal with the number of master's offices that we have to deal with the number of other areas, whether it's offices, whether it's service points that we have to deal with, we have quite a large footprint in the country. And it's not merely feasible that we could be able to get all information as quickly as we wish if we didn't have information systems that are working and that are secure. So we have looked at our infrastructure over a period of time and how our infrastructure was enabling us to do our work. We have realized that over a period we had not been investing in ICT development both at systems level and as well as refreshing the hardware and all those other issues. In addition, we have told you and we did previously that we were even at the stage where we were running out of licenses, and the licenses that we had were expiring, we were not renewing them because of affordability reasons. As a result of that, we felt if we were to regroup as an organization and reposition how we provide the services, we can't continue just investing on ICT haphazardly. We need a strategy for that. And therefore, in the development of the strategy, we were looking at that. The second element that we were looking at was the type of infrastructure that we are putting together. We can't be just drawing every infrastructure that we think is appropriate. If we do not have a strategy, we are going to start doing that, just buying anything that goes in the market. The third element, therefore, we needed to standardize what we are going to bring into our system. Supported, of course, the mainframe, the ICT network, the capability to maintain all of that infrastructure. The third element that we wanted to look at was we wanted to start winning ourselves out of the current overburden that we feel we are under of utilizing external service providers for assisting us in managing our day-to-day ICT issues. And in running ourselves out of that, we wanted to start creating our own pool of officials who are going to be responsible at systems development level, but we are also going to be responsible not on everything. We certainly are very aware that we can't have capacity in-house that will be able to deliver everything in our network. But what is important is that in whatever it is that we deliver, we must identify. So our strategy then identifies areas that we are going to continue to outsource for a reasonable period, identifies the areas that are going to be our own business and we are going to be in charge of those. And finally, to give you an example of some of those areas that we are going to be in charge of, one of them would be your day-to-day rolling out of infrastructure. In other words, if you get hardware, your laptop, someone comes and installs it for you and all of that, that can be done in-house. We don't believe we need an external person to do that. The current environment and operation on the ground today is that those people are outsourced. Well, no, their function, not the people, the function. Is outsourced. Secondly, basic strategic management of what infrastructure is required where, the deployment that is. We want that to be done in-house. The high and the big ticket issues like your big, whatever it is, that needs to be done, that we still believe our capacity to handle that is not nearly adequate. So that we will still retain in the outsourced model. The bigger reason for this one, for a reasonable period, we had always known that we are, I don't know how this will sound, but the point is, we are paying what we believe is a little more than what we ought to be paying for infrastructure, for deployment, and for all of those issues. But we do not have strategic capability to negotiate these issues because we do not have the know-how of what we are negotiating. And for us, it became very critical that if we want to give ourselves a negotiation edge as a government, it would be necessary that we bring in people that can do that, that can understand that. Now, we started with that. So our strategy, therefore, the pillars are kind of, I may be missing others, but I have my good colleagues who know all the pillars off by heart. But the pillars would give us that strategy are people, management of hardware, and management of systems and systems development, managing the deployment processes, the risk management and mitigation, and the like. So those in the main would be key pillars that are underpinning our strategy. Now, this model, once we have approved the strategy, we then have to ensure that the strategy begins to be rolled out in phases, of course, because we can't just announce everything. It also included, one as an element of the strategy, an engagement with the current service providers in the system, because we have to engage them. Because if we have to start phasing out certain elements, we must have created sufficient capacity to get them have been phased in for that capacity to be phased out. And that is happening and it's ongoing. But also it meant we needed to have communicated very fundamentally with the government service provider who is CIPA in this case. And we are, as I said yesterday, in constant conversation with CIPA. On some areas they are big, on others they are big risks, which we must take as an organization, but on other areas of the strategy, we probably don't agree as much as we would wish to, but we at least are agreed that we need a strategy. So that is now in place. We have started the shifting as a result. We created both on a temporary basis because it does take a little bit of time to create posts formally in the strata. The posts are there. We have filled these posts and we will continue to fill the posts. And we really are beginning to see the difference in terms of some of the issues. Now the members would recall that when the Auditor General presented his report, he said some of the issues in our ICT system are easy to fix, like just ensuring that you create a protocol around password management, around how many times you log in and how many, when can you be kicked out and all of those things. those things, that those capacities beginning to help us manage that. And we are comfortable that even though we are not where we should be now, we are going to be where we want to be, consistent with that strategy. Okay. Now, due to in fact, when we came to the committee a few times, we were really saying we are needing to refresh. There are scanners and all of those equipment that were outdated. We were lucky and we are grateful to this Honourable House and to National Treasury for giving us some money to be able to refresh. We will speak a little later about just the budget when it comes to, amongst others, the issues that we were discussing yesterday around paying your debt for this year, the following year, and beating down your budget. This is one area where we would also wish to highlight that to the Honourable Committee and the reason for that. So we got that money, we started refreshing, and indeed we are halfway in the process of refreshing. One of the biggest issues that has continued to bedevil the department as one of the risk areas that were identified by our internal risk system was whether, in fact, we have adequate capacity to have business continuity in the event that there was an eventuality obtaining in our business. We went back to try and understand and unpack our systems, and the three pillars, they begin to respond to that. We, in presentation that we have circulated, we have used the word virtualized servers. Now, I was struggling with this because it's a big English word. But in the final analysis, it was explained to me that all this big word means that it's the centralization of servers. So we have centralized our servers, which means that any court, if one court wants to have a big breakdown of thought, it can move to a different site, different court, and use the information. So at least at that level, there is a sharing of information because information is centralized. So that exists. It does give us a small window of managing our risk at site level. The next level is that we have an arrangement with the telecom data center, which keeps all departmental data in a highly secured environment. Now, as South Africans, we truly believe and stand by telecom, and we don't think anything could ever happen to their security environment. But even with that, we don't feel it's adequate. So we also have an arrangement for backup to be kept at Metro 5. And this we are doing, and before the question arises, we were asked, are we updating on a daily basis? Are we saving information on a daily basis? And are we keeping backups on a daily basis? And our response then was, yes, we're doing that. So that then speaks to our strategy and where we are in terms of the implementation and what do we think our risk issues are going to be. Of course, it is ideal that, and we are working on towards that, to have an absolute risk mitigation strategy which will translate into a broad system of thought. But we are saying where we are financially, we need to move progressively. Now, I want to speak very briefly around hardware upgrades. Now, if you look at 2011, 2012, 2013, and 2014 financial year, you would realize that there are certain things that we said we were going to do, we are doing, and there are things that we are going to continue to do. But what we did was we had to go back after the strategy was adopted to check whether the things that we were doing were consistent with the strategy, and we had to reprioritize differently. And this slide, slide on page 66, shows you the type of infrastructure that we are refreshing and the refreshment process. So, for instance, we had to work on centralized servers. When we were here, like, we were asked about server that were sitting somewhere in Port Elizabeth and wherever else, and we said no, we were changing that. So this speaks to that, the centralization. But in part, when we had serious problems last year, especially in terms of the speed with which we received information, so it was agreed that we will get additional servers that are dedicated because of the level of the pace of traffic that we were receiving. And those servers, we also bought a few last year. In addition, now, most of that information is technical detail. I'm quite happy to, at this stage, hand over to my colleague, Mr. Zimane, to speak to you about the details if the committee so wishes.
Okay.
I just last in particular, I don't understand all that, so as long as it's working as far as possible, but I just wanted to know specifically where are we as far as the integrated justice system and the case management and all that. That's what I want to know. Later. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a nutshell, what we do with the infrastructure upgrade is that we want to focus first on the things that affect everyone. So what we said is that we'll start with the service because if the service goes down, they affect everyone. So the idea is to fix everything that sorts out everyone and then go into the network, because if the network goes down, also it affects everyone. And only then can it come to the peripherals, which are the computers, the laptop, and the desktops. So that's the long and short of it. But the idea is to, what we see in the next year, we'll start seeing that most of our infrastructure will now become in warranty. So based on what we're doing and what we're going to do next year, then we'll see a better environment. But obviously, with IT, these things remain current for a short while, and then after that, you have to start the process again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to know to what extent is it possible for you to integrate security issues into IT, taking into consideration what was reported yesterday, that you're spending around $350 million on security. Because I guess if you have good security system within IT, I guess it's something that can actually help reduce the cost. If you can talk about it, and also indicate also in terms of IT as well, how you do your asset disposal.
You want to buy some of your own computers? Correka, do you want to buy some of the old computers?
Okay,
thank you very much. I'll start with the asset disposal process. There is a two-step process that we follow in the department for disposing the assets. The first one is the technical aspect, which is just to make sure that what is in the computers is cleared before we can dispose of it. Recall that the process, by the time we finish it, we then issue what we call a disposal certificate. Once that is done, only then do we then do the normal disposal process, which takes any form of either destruction or selling or donating to schools, but then the appropriate choice is taken at that point. In terms of the security aspect, of course, it's something that we can look at in terms of integrating security with IT. There are pockets of the IT solutions that already exist in terms of us being able to monitor some of our security infrastructure. But it's something that it's definitely something that we have to look at in future to make sure that environment. Thank you.
Thank you. I think in terms of asset disposal, it's always good if you also infuse it into the reports in future. just to give us an idea, if you're giving to schools, you need to have an idea of which schools you're giving access to. And indeed with IT, I think you have to fast track, right, because it will drastically bring down the amount of money that you've got to use on security. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We take the point. Again, here I would request Mr. Zimane to take us through the balance of this slide now, just to speak to the issues until we get to the end of the JCP cluster issues, because that would then move us out of this presentation.
Thank you, DJ. In terms of what we have on the slide, what we then decided last year is that we needed to support the key priorities of the department with building business applications, just to make sure that we build robust applications that help us track the cases through the system. So the prioritization really was to make sure that we follow the strategy of the department. So you see that the first one is the master's thesis state. We chose to look at that environment because it was part of the key strategic areas, and specifically thesis state because that's where we do a lot of volumes. We did another one for an ICMS module for maintenance. Maybe if I speak to both of those, what we have always had in the department is that we have this ICMS just scanning the documents and registering the cases and providing some management report. What we then decided was that now we need to make sure this ICMS that we have to manage the end-to-end business processes. And then we are the first step towards doing that. And then also again for number three, number four, we thought we should really try and make sure that we support the JCPS integration. So from the business perspective, we made sure that by the end of last year, we had integrated, by the end of last year, there's an integration that exists between SAS and Department of Justice. And also from the integrated justice system perspective, we also, every time there's a clean outcome from the Department of Justice, we also give back that information to everyone who wants it. But obviously, one of the things that we had to look at was to make sure that training is definitely tracked in the department. And one of the things that we are introducing now is that Justice College system, where we just from in the next financial year will then make sure that all the training that we do is tracked through that system. I think it's also good to say that, and I think we gave a demonstration of some of these systems when the committee visited us before, but we have now, then it was a concept, now we have implemented some of these systems. I can say the master's one is implemented in the North State office. They have been using it for about 3 months now, and the processing is mainly, and they call it paperless environment. It's pretty much process. What we do is we get the information, we get papers, we send them, and we put them in the cabinets, and then we continue processing the case using electronic medium that we would have scanned through. Thank you very much. Next. Okay. In terms of the other things that we have to do, we found that last year there were a lot of people that were requesting for information from the masters. And when the diamonds were created, the websites are where people can find the information themselves without asking us for that information. Information like who's the executor on a specific case, and we put that information in on the web portal and people can access that information. I think this one we also demonstrated when you visited us. There's also an integration with Home Affairs that we've done, where we have something called MoveIt that enables the authentication and the verification of the receipts of funds for the guardian's funds. But, and I think that the last point that you just spoken to, which talks to the strategy and the operating model changes as it relates to the people that we are hiring. After seeing all those good things, the problem of usage of systems in the environment, and it's something that we are now very, very concerned about. So we developed some of these systems, and as an organization, we need to prepare ourselves to be able to use them. So maybe if I could just jump straight to point number C that says, the usage of systems have gone down to 55% as opposed to the 100% that is desired. We looked at that concerning point, and we came up with three things that we thought were interventions that we needed to put in place. The first one was we needed to make sure that when there is a problem on this, firstly, I think one of the things that affected this quite a lot was that we had aging infrastructure. And as a result of that, it became absolutely slow in some areas to process the things via the system. And with the interventions that we're having now, we believe that that will help where people can process these things a little bit faster. But we don't want to pin it down to only that. The second part of it was we realized that it sometimes, because of our reliance on outside people, it actually takes a lot of time when people request for changes on the system to be implemented, to be effected. What we've done for that is that we have now appointed a few people in our area just to make sure that we manage actively the changes that needs to be done on the system. But more than that, we also realize that there is this one thing about training that needed to be implemented in the department, where before the people use the new systems, we must just make sure that they are properly trained. We have put together a training framework. We have put together a, with together with Justin College, we have now created a new directorate called Business Application Training. There are warm bodies there now, and we believe that if people are trained on these issues, then we'll be able to get better responses. What, before you go, thank you.
The next slide is the slide that then talks to the most anticipated integration and at cluster level. I will start just very briefly by introducing the subject, but then we have noted the direction that was given by the chairperson to the Auditor General on this, and we will of course make ourselves available for the audit from the period which this program started to today. So in as far as we are able to provide information, we will make the information available. Secondly, just on the government side of this, this is the project that's used to be a cluster, a JPS cluster project, but that we had imagined originally that we were supposed to have had business people as well as technical people sitting in this board called the IJS board. Now, over time, we started, I guess, not getting a full attention, and maybe that's the best thing I can say, as a cluster. Because less and less business people ended up in the IJS board. So we ended up with technocrats in the IJS board. And that in itself was not going to be very useful, because if they are developing systems but business can't do systems, you have a problem. So we have to address that. Secondly, originally I think people who were delegated to sit in the structure were very senior. Over time they became more and more junior and very junior in the final analysis. So we have to change that around. So sometime last year, I think it was in July last year, we convened a meeting of the IJS board, because for us in the Department of Justice, it's very fundamental that this thing works and works well, because if you are the secretary,
experience of the cannabis cluster, you need to get your report at your fingertips, at your fingertips. Unfortunately, if the system does not work, you are not able to access those reports and reports. So you need to keep calling people and getting people to meetings where you can actually go and learn the information from the system and generate reports. So we met with them, I think we met with the ICS for people. We agreed that there were certain things that had worked well, and in fact, the IJS colleagues felt very aggrieved that we were saying that things are not moving. So we had to manage our language a bit around that, but it's all sorted now. The real issue at that stage, and continues to some degree to be an issue, because we are funded as departments, even though for one integration, the development of the system at departmental level is at different stages. And the challenges that each department faces are very different challenges, even as we speak now. So we have to fix that. One of the resolutions of the JCPS cluster was that bringing the system to be an immediate substructure of the JCPS cluster, because it used to sit under the development committee. So we said, take it out of the development committee, bring it so that it becomes a direct substructure. So that governance issue we have fixed. We then just populate, bring back the relevant people, business people, as well as the relevant technical people who are systems developers, to be sitting in the right IJS board, and that has since happened. We then start managing the budget of what needs to be done, and rework the plan of what needs to be done. We can't be doing every project. Let's pick the key project that if we had in place, then it worked for everybody as quickly as possible. So that too we have done. We then said each department must have monthly reports submitted to it, and we as a cluster must have cluster reports submitted on the performance of each department in this program. That is a slow path, but it is happening, but it is slower than everything else. And manage the budget as a cluster rather than as a department. That too is happening slowly, but it is happening. Now, that deals with the first issue, which is the governance of this project. So, as a result of that intervention, I forgot one thing. We then said, look, this whole thing of everybody just doing their own thing, and there's no one testing who coordinates the problem. We want them to coordinate so that if things fall flat, we look one direction. And then that direction is his direction. He is the man who's direction we look if things do not move now. Now, it is going to take us, to finalize that, we have now been receiving all these reports that I was talking about. We receive them every quarter. They are part of the cabinet report that we submit on performance of the 8 out points of outcome 3 of the JCPS cluster. Thank you very much. At this stage, Chair, if you allow me, I will hand over to Mr. Lucifer to take us through the balance of the presentation on this issue.
Thank you, DG, and Honorable Chairman. As DG has said, there was quite an intensive review of the program, because we had realized at that point, when before we started the review, that it was necessary that we review the program to ensure that we accelerate the pace of delivery of these integrations. So what we have done, then we have said, as DG said, we can't do everything. There must be a few things that we can pick or focus on, at least for a certain period. So we identified 5 key priorities, which we said all of us must do some work to get to a certain integration point. So one of those priorities, as you have there on the slide, was the integration of cases. So during the period under review, which is the last financial year, the focus was to finalize all pilots in terms of the transmission of case information from TEPS to the Department of Justice. We which we did successfully. We signed off by the end of March last year. And in the first period of this year, we started looking at the rollout of those systems. And as well, we have gone to a certain degree in terms of that rollout. I think that will be covered in the next slide. In terms of the VA arraignment, which is the solution that we have between Department of Correctional Services and the Department of Justice, we have rolled out the system to 47 courts at this stage, linked to 21 correctional facilities to date. There's only one court of the 22 that was initially targeted, which is Mthatha, where they still refurbishments that are currently happening there. The next slide talks directly to the key five priorities that I have spoken briefly about, which is the person identification and integration. Person identification and verification application, where we use biometric information to verify identities of persons between the Department of Justice, the IJS trial vessel, as well as the police. So basically, we use that information, biometric information, to verify the identities of people with home affairs, firstly, and then the second leg of it is to check if persons have any criminal record and so on. So we use that for the planned vetting for the purpose of National Register of Sex Offenders, and also for instant verifications or instant criminal record checks for employment purposes in areas where people have to be vetted, particularly in government, where people have to be vetted to ensure that they don't have any criminal record. We use that particular system to do that. The second key priority, which is clustered also under the person integration roadmap, the CJS Unique Person Identifier. This is one thing that we have been working on for a while as a cluster, and this is now, we need the ability to provide a unique key that will identify each and every person who interacts with the criminal justice system. What we have at the moment is that we have cases, we use cases, we are able to track cases in the criminal justice system, as I indicated when I was talking about the case integration system. But what we haven't had is the ability to have one key where we can relate or link all cases that relate to a specific individual in the criminal justice system, together with the biometric information and evidence related to that person, including issues such as the base status and all of that. So we need to have a person as a central object that we can link to all other elements that relate to that person in the criminal justice system. So we are working on that as well, and we are currently in the analysis phase of that, because there's a major re-architecture work within CEPS. As you know, CEPS has been doing the IT thing for a while now, and as a result, due to due to the historical, you see the data issues. When IT started before, the concept of integration did not exist. So as a result, if Lishin will call IT and say, please do this particular system for us, and all other partners will do that. But as the technology or as the industry matures, integration has become more and more important. So the biggest problem that we need to resolve now is to make sure that all of those systems that have been built over years can speak to each other in one language. In other words, all systems in depth that have to do, whether deals with a person, whether it's in the criminal record sense, or whether it's in the fingerprints identification system and so on, all of those systems need to have one way of understanding what person is, so that all of that information that leads to a person has to be linked. So that means that is a lot of re-architecture work that needs to happen in depth before we can have the unique person identified. And this is work that has started in that regard. But before that work actually takes shape, all other downstream departments will not be able to have that unique key. So it is very important that we work very closely with that to ensure there is no slippage. As any slippage in that regard would then result in the downstream implication on other departments' work. I've already spoken about the case integration, the docket ready, as well as the docket outcome that Mr. Siman indicated briefly. We have managed to deploy that solution to 20 courts, as well as the 99 police stations in three provinces. So the first focus, the focus for the first rollout was to make sure that we go to high volume areas. So for that reason, I think the rural areas were excluded. But in the next phase of rollout, we are looking at rural areas to be part of the rollout. As part of the integration, we are also looking at getting the National Prosecuting Authority ready with its ready integration. The plan now to have that by the end of this financial year. And currently we are doing the integration testing and all of that in a pilot kind of environment. I've already spoken about the case outcome that we have deployed to those 20 and 99 police stations. The next slide. The next slide talks to the fourth key integration, which speaks to the 28 KPI or the business intelligence dashboard that we are working on, which enables now the cluster to be able to have a view of how the criminal justice system is performing. In other words, this is now a collection of data based on events in each party to the criminal justice system, from the police, National Prosecuting Authority, Department of Social Development, where we deal with issues of children and so on, as well as the Department of Correctional Services when it comes to incarceration. So we are working on creating a view, a common view of how the criminal justice system is performing, fundamentally to provide the leaders in the cluster with the information that enables them to make key decisions. In other words, if the numbers are telling us that there is the cases are being slowed at investigation point, leaders in the cluster would have that view to enable them to make a decision to say perhaps what we need is to employ more detectives, or we need to start reviewing how the detectives are conducting their work so that we can get a better touch. So the next thing is the single CJS database, which is linked to the first one. So basically this is now a single database that collects all the information in the criminal justice system so that when you pull it in the dashboard, you pull from the same source. This is one thing that we are working very hard because we know that it is the one thing that will resolve a lot of problems with regard to the stairs not matching and all of the issues which are quite a headache for us as a department and other related departments in the cluster. So we are looking at adding this to that level in not so distant a future, but the challenge that we have, as the DG has already indicated, is that the systems in each department are not at the same level. In other words, we have different challenges in different departments, and the level of maturity of our systems, the level of the availability of data that we can get electronically, it's still work in progress, and it will take a while until we get to a point where we can say we have a full picture, we have a national footprint of data in each and every area, and we are able to integrate at any level as a criminal justice system. So the DG said it is at this time we have more comfort than we did before the review of the program, that they focus, there is the right people in the board, in other words, there is senior technology people in the board, there is senior business people in the board, there is alignment in terms of priority of what we need to achieve to improve the overall picture of the criminal justice system. So, thank you. I think this is the last slide.
I'm sure Yes, that was right. Yeah, I also have some questions. But let's take those questions. I'll ask you to pose your questions. You'll note the question of DG Ms. Peseba. And then we'll just break to address that resolution we have to take about the Lack Administration Act. Mr. Swart, we were beginning to panic that you had actually left. We saw your jacket there, but, well, you were gone for so long, we were wondering. All right. Ms. Schaefer, Ms. Smart, Mr. Jeffrey, for now.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, it's more comments than questions, but I mean, I'm delighted to hear there's some folks, I'm delighted to hear there's someone in charge now, so we can look at him from now onwards. But, I mean, well done on that, DG, I must say. It clearly has been identified what the problems are and how to deal with them. My concern is, it's also, well, it sounds like this legacy problem is one of those words like efficiency gains and some kind of euphemism for inefficiency for the last 12 years. I remember, I haven't practiced as an attorney for about 12 years now, and I recall then Mr. Muhammad coming to the Law Society to address us on this nice, exciting new system we're going to have and how everything was going to be at the click of a button and you'd have a pocket and you'd see where our cases were going from here to there 12 years ago. Now, how long is it going to take before we are at that point? I mean, I'm glad you've got the thing, but I mean, why is it that when that is announced already then, the police have a different computer system that doesn't talk to the justices? I mean, how is it? And who's been coordinating it, or not coordinating, or who should have been coordinating? I mean, okay, it doesn't matter really, but, you know, it just frustrates me beyond belief. And I'm truly hoping that this is actually now, are you getting cooperation from police now? Are you satisfied now that the police systems are going to talk to the justice system? I mean, is that now at least in place? And I obviously have questions about sexual offences, so is that better left for later on? Okay.
No, there's not much more than usefully said, except just to repeat, I think it was 2007 that the Cabinet appointed the acceptance, or adopted the 7-point plan. I'm sure it was in gestation for a long time before that. In fact, one does need to despair a little bit. I know things move slowly in government, but I mean, this truly is the snail's pace. And what the DG described was what we've had in reports before, I think at least a year ago. But I think the thing kind of slipped off the radar screen, isn't that? I mean, that your IGF board fell into the hands of techies, and it was only when DGs started populating that board that there was some movement. Now, I know that you all now use the word business people. Is this the new word for departmental leaders and officials? Are we now business people only in this context, or what? It's to distinguish them from techies, et cetera. So then now you're business people. I can tell you, if you're going to start moving with a kind of alacrity, and so it's just actual business people move, because otherwise they won't be business people anymore. So I don't know how much one can say, but the report the year ago also indicated that justice was in fact the only department of the three that had started work on this. But my impression, sorry, in terms of concrete picture, my impression is that the NPA has been working. They've got that thing called ECMS, the Electronic Case Management System. And I thought that they were in fact the systems we're talking between police and NPA. So perhaps you can give us, yes, give us a more concrete idea of which systems are talking to which other systems. And what you describe here sounds very modest. And we're constantly in a pilot phase with 20 courts and 99 police stations. And so, but there are some systems in place. Is there, I suppose, in a way, your two tables here have answered that. But just give us a good idea of what's happening on the NPA side and the police side. Is it the case that the problem is really on the police side? And all problems always are.
Do you
have
just firstly, DG, a complaint. At the back of your annual report, there's a table on page 229, which is acronyms and abbreviations. Please next time include all the IT abbreviations. Some of them are not there. Then a congratulations on the Human Rights Commission PIA report, the Section 14, that's the manual compliance which is, you have a website, you have a Section 14 manual, is it accessible, when was it last updated, you do have a website, you do have a manual, it was last updated in July, which is the most recent, I think, of all the departments. They say the accessibility is good. They have different versions here. I mean, you can tell what's bad, but they've got good, they've got easily accessible, fairly easy and easy. I'm not sure which, where each one is rating. That's one of the problems. But anyway, your pirate stuff is good on that. However, your, while I'm on pirates, a general administrative thing, your figures don't add up. You had 792 requests out of PIA. You granted 141 and you refused 12. So there's a whole lot missing. Maybe it's time issues, but if you can give us that detail. Then the issue of the slides. What I wanted to know is slide 69, the 47 magistrates courts and the 21 correctional facilities. Mm. Can we get names? I mean, which courts, which facilities? Can we also get numbers? And so we can get a sense of the savings, because when we pass the video remarks, the saving in terms of you don't have to then, I suppose it's not really directly savings to justice, but it would be savings to other departments. You're not transporting the prisoner from prison to court. At least, okay, savings might be difficult, but at least numbers, and numbers per court. I mean, you must have those figures. Then, on slide 70, look, the PIVA, you're only starting that this month. The pilot is planned for October-November 2012. Just to get clarity as to where is it, so that category is pilot planned, so you would only just have started it, according to the slide, okay? But where are you, where is the pilot? Where are you starting it? See, the unique identifier is coming. The docket integration, 20 courts and 99 police stations. Again, can we get some sense of which courts, which police stations? You did report to us, you know, how long has it been going and how is it working? Because that you say the pilot is completed. Then what I don't understand is the rollout plan you've got completed. Does that mean everyone has got it? That's what completed should rollout completed means, but I would be surprised with that. And then I think, Chair, the only way we can effectively deal with this is if we have another meeting and we get all the role players together. Because I with respect to the justice officials, any complaints euphemistically put or otherwise that you've got against the NPA or the police, I'd rather have the NPA and the police present to answer. Yes. And I think that's the only way we can look at it. But it is a big problem. I mean, yes, you know, part of the difficulty, Chair, when you know, the first Mr. Nzimande, was giving his briefing, I sort of thought, actually, I'm not equipped to perform oversight over this. And that may be the problem, and IT might sound wonderful, so when Mr. Mohammed came to the Law Society, the briefing he was given was that given to give was that how wonderful it was going to be, and then it's not as wonderful. None of us lay people understand why. The Mzimanes of the world then tell us, no, it was this problem or that problem, which we still don't understand. So hopefully it will work out, but definitely it's needed. Because the difficulty is the figures within the justice system itself are not talking to us of NPA and justice. And how if those ones are not working together in terms of figures they collect, figures that presumably the court managers collect or the magistrates, I don't know which it is, I don't know how anything can do. But anyway, let's hope. That's all we can say within our comprehension levels.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we don't understand better how to help us having police, because they'll all tell us that we don't understand. But it's worth it. But I also would like to know, can you just tell us how much, I mean, of the money that's been specifically allocated for this has actually been spent and on what?
which is where I'm going to come in, DG, and Mr. Rosetta and Mr. Nzlan, is the budget allocation. The reason for my request to the Auditor General's office arises from a challenge by my counterpart, which is the subsequent faculty. And she had asked the police for a briefing. And they gave her a really rosy picture. But it left her very dissatisfied and frustrated because there was stuff they couldn't tell her. And hence, Mr. Jeffrey's point is very relevant. At some point, we're going to need you, SAPS, Correctional Services, Social Development, NPA, and those committees. So it'll be one big meeting to help us understand how is this working, okay? So the budget for this IJS project, does it reside with you? If so, how does the other role players draw from it, or do they get their allocation directly from Treasury for the IJS project? Right, that's my first question. And then, does the KDI dashboard, the budget for that, also come from the same budget? How many magistrate courts are there in South Africa? Mr. Jeffrey wanted names, just so that we understand. You say, what, 20 courts here, and then in another one there's 47. So just to give us an understanding of how far we are. The point raised by Ms. Schaefer is correct. Which brings me to my next question. When did this program begin? Ms. Smuts says 2007. Okay, but I suspect it started even before then. But Ms. Smuts correctly says, well, there may have been a gestation period. I don't know what that is. When will we reach all the magistrates' courts, and of course even the high courts as well? You spoke of the arraignment project. My understanding of arraignment is first appearance. But does that include bail? Doesn't include bail. So I just need clarity on that. Forgive me, I'm not a lawyer. All right, just those few questions. Just hold them there, prepare your answers. Honourable members. Okay.
I'm sorry. Just on a video remand arrangement, whatever you want to call it, system. I just would like to know, as far as I know, Weinberg Court has got the system. But I still see prisoners going up and down every day in the traffic. Why?
To Weinberg. To Weinberg.
No, it's more, no, sorry, not Weinberg, to get some.
No, if you say it's working in Weinberg.
No, I've got it wrong. Okay. They're going from Polesmore. It's meant to be Polesmore. That's,
yes,
that's it.
They passed me on the
entry. Yeah.
All that, yeah.
Okay.
It's
That's why I think the figures would be useful. You know, is it working? What we're looking for. I mean, obviously those prisoners that one sees on the Vaal Drive could be there for trial. But how many of them there for remand? And if they're there for remand, why are they there for remand? That would be the question. I don't know if you've got that now. Maybe just a disappointment on slide 71. The single CJS database not started, pilot plan to be determined, rollout plan to be determined. You envisage it to start in the 2013-14, that's the next financial year. That's fine, but I mean, we've been asking for the single database. That's the whole problem with the system. And can we get a little bit more, if not now, then in writing, a little bit more detail? I mean, it's worrying you're going to start it in the next financial year if you haven't even identified where the pilots are going to be, because presumably the date between identifying the pilots and doing it is quite vast. And DG, with respect but with reference to the TRC regulations, you know, we have learned over the time the dates that the department gives are not necessarily that accurate. And I just wanted to ask, sorry, one I'd forgotten. That was slide 68. Point C, the dropping of the percentage of lower court deployed ICMS system dropped to 55%. What was it before? Was it 100? That was your target, but what was the reality? And then the sort of polite speak of, you know, some courts experienced challenges. You gave one example, I can't remember now what it was, but just maybe be a little bit more open on those challenges. Was it a problem of inability to use technology, or was it an infrastructure problem? I think you referred more to infrastructure, but what's being done? Are these systems being, what training is given to people when the system is applied? I mean, I don't know who it would be, whether it's the court manager who's meant to use it. And then last question, Chair, security, it was raised, but with these wonderful things that you're planning, like PIVA, how are you going to stop somebody hacking in and showing that you have no record, whereas in fact you're a mass murderer who's a habitual criminal? How are you, will the access points be secure? I mean, will you not be able to generally access over the web? Will you have to go to particular server points? But what are you doing about security? Because this sounds like someone could make a lot of money hacking in and changing things. Or creating false things, yeah. I mean, we could maybe, actually tell us how to hack in, and then we can, like, give a...
No.
...to the Honorable Villa.
No.
No, I mean, that kind of thing can happen. You can find it both ways in terms of records being, that was a joke, obviously. But you could find records being removed and records being put in.
Fair enough. All right. If you prepare the answers to that while we deal with this, we have a quorum now. We need to resolve the extension of the Black Administration Act on the moment. Mr. Jeffrey? No, we're talking about the extension of the Black Administration Act now. That's what I'm trying to do, but your colleague and my colleague are not assisting us. All right. Black Administration Act and the extension thereof.
Planning, we have to get, it would be a committee bill. We have to get permission of the House to introduce a committee bill. So we would then, once we get the intention, would I think be to go to the House on Tuesday. And I don't know if anything's drafted. I know that Christine has been harassing us for some time, but I think we sprung this on her. But the intention would be that we seek the permission, the committee agrees, seek the permission of the House to introduce a committee bill to extend the relevant section in the Black Administration Act for a further period. I think we're going to have to determine that period now. We can put it into the bill. Because the traditional court still will not be law by the end of December, which is when that deadline ends. And Mr. Sana can tell us how many times we've amended it or we've extended it already, so this is something we're used to. I mean, it should be easy now. How many, can I ask through you, Chair? How many
times, Mr. Sana?
Six times.
Yeah. And clearly the law, the bill that we will be passing is called the Repeal of the Black Administration Amendment Bill. If we had tabulated yearly, then it would be the Fifth Amendment, but luckily for us, because it's only one a year, we don't have a number like the Constitutional Amendment, but it's that.
I'll call it the Fifth Repeal.
Yeah, let's call it the Fifth. All right.
I just think it's about the time period of the extension. That's a big concern.
3 years? Yes, 3 years. With any law that comes into effect, repeals it. Yes, I know. That's what we're factoring in that you have the elections coming 2014. A new parliament and that sort of thing. Well, okay, but if a new law comes in, that law will repeal this. So.
Cool.
Seconded? Seconded by Ms. Fatt. Are we all in favor? Thank you. That's done. All right, they've gone to focus. They're allowed to caucus.
Yeah.
The majority of the questions are going to be shared between the Dimane and Mr. Lebeba. The other questions here and there which relate to Bahia will be shared between Ms. Hashere and Dr. Dizier. We should also try and move up on the issues that were raised a little earlier. And of course, Advocate Duran would also assist us on some of the issues related to the 7-point plan implementation and the timelines and all those issues. Chair, just to preface this, insofar as the information relating to the names of courts where we are piloting and the names of police stations, we do have that information. We would wish to respond in writing to that. And to the extent that we have to respond to the issues of budget, both historical budget, which is some investment on the IJS program, we wish to do it this way. We wish to provide a written report on that budget, but we also are cognizant of the fact that the committee will convene us, and so we'll go back to people in the cluster and say, let's prepare a cluster report that will be submitted. So if you still feel our responses are inadequate, take them within that context. And again, we want to commit that we will, as soon as we leave here, we will write a formal cluster advisory, as it were, to all departments in the cluster to request them to make themselves available and make the information available to the Auditor General for the program. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, DG. Honorable Chairperson. I will attempt to start with the easier questions and then go gradually to more complex questions. Sure. The first question relates to the ECMS rollout and readiness thereof, the NPA solution.
We have a problem with excellence and deviation.
Noted, some of us. Noted, honorable member. The National Prosecuting Authority Electronic Case Management System.
No, you can say No, come on now. Let's leave it.
The NPA has been reporting to us on the ECMS for years.
No, continue.
Don't fall for the interruption.
Thank you, Chair. The ECMS solution, the progress thereof is that the solution we have, as you know, that the NPA prosecutors are currently housed in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development Court, if you like. So they are generally using the Department of Justice infrastructure for their core business solutions, which the electronic case management system is one of them. So the site assessment has been conducted in the past month or so, which basically checks the infrastructure needs for the solution to be deployed to the 20 cores that we have already, because the solution is integrated. The electronic case management system goes with the integrated case management system in the Department of Justice, as well as the case administration system, which is in the Department of Police, the Washington Police Services. So that process has the same place, and we have identified what the needs are from an infrastructure point of view. So there is progress in that space. The development has been completed, and currently we are doing the testing of the solution, and we will soon deploy that particular system to the 20 pre-identified codes after the solution that we have deployed for. So that deployment will happen by the end of this financial year, according to the plan. Are we satisfied with the steps progress so far? Yes, to a large degree we have seen a lot of progress. Since we have done the review and we have got the leaders to be hands-on, and we have sort of looked at the visibility of the progress, both from a financial performance as well as the progress on the ground, we have seen quite a lot of improvement in terms of our cooperation with the South African Police Services. And the proof of that is the solution that the case solution or the case administration solution that they have collaborated with us in terms of delivering the case the case integration solution to the 99 police stations and 20 courts. So we are gradually improving our cooperation in that regard, and we have now the right people with decision making power sitting in the board. So there's a positive progress that we can do. The video arraignment, which costs and so forth, that information we do have, and CG indicated we can make it available in writing if so required, and we can even tell you how many cases we have dealt with through that solution. The allocation of budget, the budget is allocated in the following manner. And there's a number of departments that are participating in the justice system program. And we have the South African Police Services, we have the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, we have the National Prosecuting Authority, we have Department of Correctional Services, we have Department of Social Development, Department of Home Affairs, and legal aid to a certain extent. So National Treasury allocates funds to two votes. One is the South African Police Services vote, and the other one is, let me just explain that. The mandate allocated to that vote takes care of two sub-programs. One is a sub-program, and the second one is the IJS transversal sub-program, which is now the work that happens in the transversal app, which is a link for all the departments. It is also within SEPs, yes. Now, the second fund is the one that's allocated to the accounting officer in the Department of Justice, and that part of the budget is then allocated to other departments, but all other departments that I've mentioned other than that and the transversal. So in other words, those departments are the certain allocation and they spend in there. In other words, it's the from the book we claim from our department up to the total of the allocated budget. The other question was, when did it start? The IJS program was conceptualized following the National Crime Prevention Strategy that was, I think, adopted by Parliament, Cabinet, yes, in 1996. So following that, the concept started, and I think the program started gaining traction when the CETA 2000 plus were done. Then I think a couple of years after that, then the program started operating in a manner that it is now, where the board was started and all of that. But as Gigi explained, then since then it has taken a different journey up to where it is now. So the last question that I want to respond to before I hand over to my colleague here is the issue on slide 71, where it says that when we speak about the criminal database that has not started yet, that we have not determined when the pilot is going to happen, and all of that. First, actually, I need to provide a little context, because when I dealt with this slide, I explained that the criminal seizure database is linked to the 28 KPIs. In other words, we have a dashboard and we put a set from a single database. At this point, we have a gradual implementation of that. The first approach that we are taking, we are using what you call FTP, which is the file transfer protocol, to get the information into the transversal hub from the systems of each department that is participating in the program. The level of maturity of that information, because of the different levels of the system development in this department, is not at a level where it justifies a building of a common database, as it were. We will gradually develop and ultimately build a single database as soon as we have sufficient data from department. And I'm speaking about sufficient data, I'm talking about as we get closer to getting information in an event-driven kind of way, where we don't collect information after the events that occurred, but we record the event as each department or as each particular criminal justice system operates its business normally. in the background will see the mechanism that makes updates. In other words, if somebody comes back and says, how many people have been arrested in the police today, we don't have to go to the police and ask them to write, to draw a report. We just go separately and say, all of these events have been recorded in the past better. All leaders that have access to that dashboard will be able to know at any point in time when or how many of those things have been dealt with. So I think this explains it. I'll leave at this point then and we'll hand over to my colleague to deal with other questions. Thank you.
When will that happen? Because, you know, there are, and then the other aspect linked to that, I remember the former Deputy Minister of Justice had raised the issue of a single number. You know, that the problem is at the moment you get arrested, you're in a CAT number. You go to the match court, the district court, you've got a number there. Then it gets remanded to the regional court or the high court and you get another number and on goes. And how is that going? But I mean, the issue is basically, you were sort of saying you don't have enough statistics, but the statistics are coming every day. When are you going to be able to stop? But if I say to you, can you mind asking me how many people were arrested at the Cavan police station, that you can then quickly go onto the system and get that information because it all should have been locked in. If I want to know, where is X who was arrested at Caledon police station last week? You can find out arrested, held there, remanded in custody to the magistrate's court, given bail, next date is this. Given bail, paid the bail 2 days later, the next date is this. That's what we need. And when is it, basically when is it going to happen? Because there will all be roughly the same figures. You know, we have a problem in terms of child justice. There's a number, we were given a figure of people arrested by the police, children arrested by the police. We were then given a figure, I think, DG, by the NPA, I don't think it was by yourselves, of children who then got into the system. And there's a big gap. There's a whole lot of kids who presumably got arrested and then just someone got released. And then you wonder why were they arrested in the first place.
Anyway,
that was a side issue. The thing is, when will this start? Can you be a little bit more concrete?
Sorry, Mr. I don't think we've got a response to my issue as well. As to what time frame are you now looking at for to be fully implemented?
I thought he was getting there.
Well, he was finished and he was handing it to somebody else. So unless the other person getting there, I haven't heard the answer.
All right.
Mr. Mitzvah
or Mr.
Mitzvah?
Okay. Let me. With the question by Honorable Jeffrey. We are in a journey of modernizing the criminal justice system. And as much as we know that there's a number of pains that all of us are frustrated about in the criminal justice system today, it is not easy to get all of the things happening overnight. This is a very complex program because it involves a number of departments which have different monies. Although we are working together in the criminal justice system, but we have different mandates and each of the parties in the criminal justice system. Sometimes the priorities are driven towards fundamentally their core mandate before anything else. So what we have done in the past year or so was to make sure that while the departments are working on their priorities in their own departments and towards their own mandate, we also make sure that the work that we do in the board, which is supposed to resolve some of these issues, speeding up the progress to get us to the end state, is to happen. We have said, let us all work towards the same goal. In other words, let us, as the Department of Justice is sitting here today, we are playing a coordinating role.
And in other words, we now have to influence other departments to get to that room. But we said we can't work on those bases. We need to get to a point where we say all the plans of the program, because we have all agreed that these are the things that we need to achieve. But let's make sure that they all are in our understanding plan, so that each department, like the police and the Department of Justice, have to answer all those issues in the parliamentary oversight committees. We should also get other departments to do that. All departments that are participating in the cleanup. But we are gradually getting to that stage. What I'm trying to say is that we have not been moving at the same pace, all of us. So we are now putting measures in place to accelerate the movement in this area. We will, the issue of when, at what point will we get to have developed the single database. We have a plan that we are reaching toward, but that plan also has certain constraints that we are dealing with. One of it is the issue of resources, getting the correct skills in the program and so on. Up to, I think, for the past year or so, we haven't had a mechanism that we have to contact specialized skills to work on the program. And the issue of business intelligence is one of the areas that was neglected the most. So we are now waiting from a back foot to come to sort of make up the time that we have lost during the time that we didn't have sufficient resources. So at this stage, we can provide the plan that we are waiting to have. But I'm very reluctant at the point to sort of publicly commit to a certain deadline. We should now mean that I'm also, as the Department of Justice, we are publicly committing on behalf of other departments who are not represented here today. We can provide plans that we have all agreed upon, but as you know that in a project environment, we have dependencies. And if there is a delay in one area in the program, it has a real effect on other activities that are happening in the program. So we can provide a plan, but at this stage I'm very reluctant to say that on this date it will happen. Thank you. And the other question that was asked by the other federal member, Ms. Schaefer. What was the question?
You've answered it. Yes.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Schaefer and Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, I think it's the same decision as we had before the last 12 years. And if you've agreed on plan with the other departments, then I think you should see it. And I think that it's quite clear that you don't have the faintest clue when you're going to start implementing it, and in terms of clue when it's going to be finished. So I think we need to have that meeting with the other departments all together as soon as possible. Because I do take the point that it entirely depends on you, but if you have had a meeting and you have agreed on a plan, then bring that plan to that meeting. We can quiz all departments on it, and particularly staff, because I know they have always been problem. And I think that really needs to happen soon now. Thank you.
Well, it'll only be next year, I'm sure.
But also on that point, I mean, I don't think we can take any further here, but I think to the DG and her possible executive capacity, I think that meeting, I mean, the Justice Committee would be expecting the departments to come up with a date and dates for implementation. So if you could convey that to your colleagues in the other departments that are affected.
Have a good year.
Perhaps just some clarification on some of the aspects. In terms of the process that was indicated as to when it started, etc., I think we just need to go back that there was first a process that when we mentioned 1996, etc., when we looked at the Durban demonstration of possibilities and on Ebron, etc., when we started to develop the integrated justice system thing. And that started with showing what is possible in terms of demonstration possibilities with technology, etc. That then went through the various stages until we started with a 7-point plan in 2007-08, and where we started developing what needs to be dealt with so that we can have common information, etc. And that led to the 28 KPIs which we developed in terms of the high-light performance information throughout the system. So when we talk about the KPI dashboard, etc., the information that we will get there, that is performance information across our criminal justice system. It's not necessarily the information that what happens at a police station in terms of the arrest of a person and what happens to that person individually. That is dealt with separately as another development. So I just want to distinguish between those things so that we don't mix up the performance management information with the other systems that are being developed. At this point in time, we have developed single computer languages so that various departments can, machines can speak to each other, and we can extract that data through the hub, which was mentioned. We also have, in terms of systems development, now in terms of some of the departments, linkages, where we can get some information. But the dependency that was indicated here is, for example, if we take a practical example, we want to know what is the current number of people in correctional services this morning. That system from DCS needs to give us back. And their system at this point in time have major challenges, etc., that they try to fix up from their side. And it's the same with some of the other departments, etc. So we're trying to fix up those things so that we can then get that information. We built the infrastructure so that once we get that information, we can then link it. Next step that we are building in conjunction with the KPI dashboard is to have analysis dealt with from that information that is being, so that we have a proper analysis of each set of data across the criminal justice system. So that is also taking place. Just in terms of the unique number that Mr. Jeffrey requested, that is also receiving attention, so that we have that unique identifier throughout the system that is linked to each individual as he comes into it. That person out of it. That's the team of it. And that is what I think perhaps was not described accurately enough, that it's the acronym PIVA actually stands for, that personal unique identifier throughout the system, and that will give us that possibility. Yeah, I think just some of these clarifications just to assist, but I really agree that we need to have all the departments together so that we can look at it. Just in terms of the budget, we are in liaising from the criminal justice system review side with National Treasury into looking at the money that is currently allocated to the police. Mm-hmm. And in actual fact, we have a meeting Monday with National Treasury, police, and other role players to unpack that money that is lying there. And looking at, because a lot of it went to the police and not necessarily to all the other departments, in reallocating some of those prioritizations into the things that need to be dealt with. So when we have that meeting that you've indicated of the various departments, we'll be able to give feedback in terms of what's happening in terms of that. Thank you, Jim.
Well, I hope the police have used it for the intention of this. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you, Agnes. Yes. Who else? Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Chair. Mine are just two questions. The first one was the security. I think security is definitely one of those things that we worry about in IT. But just to talk to it a little bit, the first one is, and maybe if I could start with the angle, if you were to put something on the database that's not supposed to be there, we in every IT system we build old trails. We make sure that we allocate passwords, and we make sure that everyone who log in, we know who they are. But these IT systems, by themselves, they've got an inherent audit trail in them, just to make sure that whoever comes in, we know who the person is. But I'm not going to say in any way that any system is hacked. At NASA.
Yeah. Or the CIA.
Yeah.
I don't get to go to the measures. Okay. What I'm saying is, yes, you have looked at it, and you're relatively confident that way.
Okay,
that's
fine.
Yes,
that's good. Just on that aspect, and I think we'll come back to it later, in terms of the cybersecurity policy framework that was developed, part of it is also looking at a policy relating to the cybercrime aspects, which include the hacking aspects. And that is being developed at the moment with police and SSA being very integrally involved. And those solutions will then be married with what is happening in terms of the integration aspect.
At some point, I'm going to ask you to what extent is SSA involved in this. I've become very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I don't want you to respond now. Please go ahead, Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you. And the last question from my side was, what were the issues that caused the utilization? Yeah. It was a long list, but I would reduce it to what we consider to be the major issues. The first one is the practicality of people being ready to use IT. And I usually use the example that says, I'm sure all of us could look at the presentation and work from it, but all of us are carrying papers now, meaning we're probably not as ready as we'd like to be in terms of using the IT equipment and using the savings that are expected to be there. So the justice environment itself, it's very paper intensive, and sometimes it gets very difficult for people to use the technology. But I want to build on to it and to say this. One of the things that sometimes competes with IT is the speed at which we have to execute things. And one of the things that happens is that, for example, when somebody walks in and you have to process their case, it's easier to, for example, if somebody has to walk into the master's office, it's probably easier to take a form that is completed and take the form and look at it and see that it's signed and there, and then continue with the next case. But with IT, then you are then forced to make sure that you capture the data. And that on its own makes people very reluctant because it slows down the process at the beginning with the anticipated benefits at the end, at the tail end. So these are some of the issues that at a principal level that affect some of these things. But I think we have identified also real issues that we had to deal with. The first one was, as articulated before, we still have some of our IT equipment being outdated, very old, and that doesn't have the process, because the processing, when you eventually decide to use these things, it becomes very slow. But like the DJ said, we're very grateful that we got some money to sort out that problem. And we're beginning to sort out that problem by implementing the things that we had displayed there. Secondly, the other one, which was we believe was a big issue, was the training aspects of this. And like explained earlier, we are just trying very hard to make sure that we implement IT training in the department. I think we've made good strides in the last 4 to 6 months, because we now have one body, and we now have a training strategy, and we now have a way, an approach to make sure that people in the department will be trained when new applications are introduced. The list is very, very long, but I thought I should cover only the...
Other than the length of time this is taking, every time I hear about this, I get very excited.
I do.
I do.
Ask Mr. Muhammad to explain why he misled the society of our country.
Well, yes, sir.
Chad, is it interesting to the person raised around the PIA number? And I take the point that we should have mentioned the last sentence that says all other cases, this number of cases are in process and no decision has been made on them. I think if we take a point that we should have made sure that we account for all the numbers in this sentence.
The other question, that then one gets a little worried about the length of time you're taking to make decisions. And I don't think you need to give any figures now, but just one would hope that the lead department for PIA that you do respond within the statutory time limits. You have to improve the system to ensure that you do.
Thank you very much. We do keep to the statutory the requirements in terms of responses, but not all responses are given within, for instance, the 30-day period. But there is a process which is legislated which we must then comply with and we try as much as possible to keep to that. And in fact, it is the first year, last year, that we were not able to meet our pioneer target. But it was very difficult to reason because of the number of applications that were submitted, which for us to be in the record. And I think those were, for the first time, because we had never received some of the higher process, those requests. And so, firstly, I think the thing was completely overwhelmed because I remember that we don't know everything that goes to the Office of the Deputy Information Officer. So the thing was completely overwhelmed by that. And so by the time they woke up to figure out that some of those records had been left and took forever to find or reconstruct them, time was running at the pace that we had not planned for. So then we had planned that going into the same as possible if we receive requests that are out of the ordinary so that we can see how we cut out the tender as quickly as possible so that we do not miss the timeline. Other than the issue that we raised yesterday on training and all of those wonderful issues, it's one of the areas where we were not used in target previously. Thank you, sir.
That was very interesting. You don't have to respond, Mr. Mohammed.
Okay, I was going to respond to the question on the best answer.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. As you know, Honourable Chairperson, the Western Cape in particular, there is of course national statute that would be made available, but in the Western Cape, because the AVR was launched in June last year, which was explained in some of the Honourable Members present, at first launch. Since then, for the last 9 months, a bit more of these AVR systems have been launched at various points, including the metro, in the fall, now, the system is utilized, if you will, also for the postponement of criminal cases, but there are some magistrates who have gone beyond that. We can also do, for example, withdrawal of matters, as well as some instances, transfer matters from the district court matters to the regional court matters where the judge is particular. Now, just to give a very brief outline, the value adding of the system to date, and I'm thinking particularly in this area, in the Western case, besides the reduction in the number of waiting trials, the reduction in the high transfer cost is obvious. That cost has not been worked out. The reduction in administrative workload in booking of ATDs is prevalent, clearly. And of course, there is a clear and prevalent and experience on a daily basis by our correctional services counterparts, as well as the mitigating the risk of escape in such instances. Now, one can give a response to that effect. Just to say, for example, before I come to that, local, the management of the CVR, there is a provincial committee, each of the province, where led by judiciary, the relevant stakeholders, correctional services, NPA and SAP. What they do is also to set standards, for example, developing currently a protocol for uniform use and provision when applying and effecting AVR processes on two ends, that is the correctional center and the other end is the court. Remember, the AVR system, when it lies, that end of correctional center is part of the court. The regulation of the court and all etiquette will apply. And that the protocol will deal with that particular qualitative function in itself. Now, the statistics, for example, on the Cape Town one, when it was launched in, or misplaced in June, at the end of August, the statistics upward was 220
cases were dealt with through the AOA outsourced button, which is the mainstay. At the end of September, it is now 1,486, the total that has been dealt. In Cape Town, the Cape Town Board of Course starts only at the end of August, and for the last, since September 1st to date, they have dealt with just over 250 matters. The reason for that this year. The reason for the variation, of course, is developmental, firstly. We must remember also the interrelationship between ourselves, the Department of Justice and Correctional Services. There are also procurement processes in systems procurement at both ends, which is being coordinated through the IJS project. But operationally, what is important also, encouraging, of course, NPA members, the prosecution and the judiciary for purpose of logistics. For example, the regional courts, some regional courts want to utilize also in more serious matters. But infrastructure, design and development need further attention, of course. And therefore, it was started in the courts at a stage as part of the development. Now, the Cape Town one, Jacqueline first, of course, those are not matters for EVR. There are instances where counsel or defense attorneys would insist. We must remember the voluntary process. If the defense agrees, and then we proceed with the area. If the defense, for whatever reason, does not agree, we can enforce it up to the matter, even if it's a proponent. There may be other arguments to raise in the present. And then there's often also other matters, logistical matters, in terms of consultation, etc. So our judiciary in this part of the world has taken a view that where the accused party or the defendant agrees in such matters, of course, is appealed. This is, of course, then beforehand for the hearing or hearing that takes place. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chen. Not to belabor the point, but just to give some verification in terms of one of the added values that we receive in terms of this is when he talked about the booking out aspect. We need to bear in mind that every time a person leaves correctional services for a court hearing, whether it's just for a postponement, etc., they book him out totally with all his stuff, with everything. And then that evening when he comes back to court, he's booked in again with everything again. So it is extreme administrative processes which we are saving on through things like this. But then we can find also a very challenge that's not related to people or things. In the Western Cape, for example, two of course I think is not operational at this point in time because a fiber cable, the fiber optic cable was damaged. Now that had to be replaced, etc., and that is out of anybody's hands. But that has now led to that system not being operational for the past 2 months, I think. And we're working on it to try to get that sorted out. But this has huge possible beneficial impact countrywide. Now from a criminal justice system perspective, we're monitoring it countrywide through the JCS cluster and development committee, looking to ensure that there are proper protocols countrywide, etc. And I think this is going to be one of the success stories that we're going to have for the future. It's really starting to look at great potential. Thank you, Chair.
Of course, where the fiber optic was damaged.
Also at Cape Town, as well as at Mitchell's Plain, those are the three that have been damaged. That's currently operating right now. The others have started to function again. As I said, the interrelation between the correctional services, the nature of a fine cohesion is critical. But we know also we have different systems of procurement in each of the departments, despite the IJS protocol or intention. So, but it's been attended to, we do expect progress very soon in the future, because there is excitement from our key implemented and role players, which are the judiciary and prosecution today.
This one procurement process, how exactly does it work? I mean, it sounds like you've got a different one for each court, or different, how exactly does it work?
When I refer to the procurement process, we must remember, the for example, the fiber optic cable thinking, for example, is a pause of medium A to the admission center. That part of the project itself is managed by correctional services. Although the project is coordinated through the IJS process,
particular technical process happens in the baseline department, and of course we have to adhere to the rules that govern that procurement.
Are we going to need you to go and address Law Society again? just to try and persuade them, because, you know, you made the point that if the defense lawyer wants his day in court, then there's nothing anyone can do. So I'm envisaging a situation where you are going to be sent by DG Sinmane to go and speak to them and say, look, please, colleagues, you know, come on board and...
In the matters, in fact, most matters that have initial strength is a lot of excitement, and other courts are following too. Largely the activeness of universities and the judiciary there. Chief Magistrate and the Magistrate concerned, very active in this process. You can ask that other courts to come and give similar experiences and share that. But I must say the whole society, the defense attorney has been on board. In fact, they prefer that in both cases. All these matters, they said.
I would think so, because we've got a report from Fitz, and one of the issues they touched on was attorneys going to court and requesting postponements willy-nilly, which is causing the backlog. So this would actually assist them. Because now they get more postponements.
I imagine that it's not so easy if, I mean, a number of criminal defense attorneys have a number of clients on any particular day, and very often they only go and consult on the morning of the hearing, so it's not convenient for them to not have them present at the court.
All right. I think we can move on, did you? It's been very interesting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. we are really nearing to a close of Program 1.
Okay.
Oh, well. All right. We'll now move to the work that we did. Most of you would know that in terms of the public service and administration, we are required as departments to develop service delivery improvements and plans, which would then, the first and foremost, include a charter, service charter. We finalized our service charter. When we tabled our strategy document, we also shared the charter with this honorable house. And of course, we did say the charter in itself is a very operational document and requires to be at every court, and once it is there, it requires to be implemented. In other words, the service standards that are actualizing the purpose contained in the charter must then be implemented. Given the activities that are required in terms of the charter, the targets that are required in terms of the charter, of the service standards, we have found at the department that our resources, our human capacity in particular, our financial resources, we are not able to implement the full extent of the charter, and therefore the service plans that we developed, we were very specific that we were going to do that on a phased basis. We also said, in addition to that, we are going to be able to start with a strong focus on the fact that we had finalized the charter, did not mean that it had already been implemented, because we needed to train people at court level who are then going to be implementing the charter. So we have already done the training, and we are continuing to do the training. Consistent with this, we also identified a number of sites where we piloted, and I think we spoke very briefly when we presented before this honorable house, where we dwell on lean management, just very briefly. Lean management is an intervention that we brought to bear in the department, where we did the lack of standardization
Just then, we started off in Tamba Court to standardize these processes, and there we are seeing real value of that project, which is lean management project. We've trained people on lean, we've trained people on service standards, and this year is the beginning of the rollout phase. In this process, we can include two things fundamentally. The first is the broader communication with the public on what to expect in terms of the service standards. So we've been on radio, we've been pretty much in court, in some of the interactions with the public, where we've been telling them some of the level of expectations for phase one. So that is ongoing. In particular, remember that I had said we had prioritized two areas in Benin. The first area relates to maintenance and maintenance processes. The second area relates to masters, but in master's environment, it's high volume that we target at first, and the high volume relates to a space between 0 and 125,000, especially the interstate estates. But even if they are interstate, we have prioritized them. But those very minimal type estates. Going forward, of course, we need to increase our capacity and increase our training and all of that, but our view is that we want to go consistent with the resources that we have in place. I now move to the presidential hotline. Without going through the history of the project, the Department of Justice, we always catch up a little later than everybody on the requirements that we must comply with and in implementing those requirements. So when the President had issued a directive that related to the complaints that are raised through the presidential hotline, it took us a little bit of time, and we explained ourselves to this Honourable House last year, in fact, the year before last. So last year we worked very hard to perfect our own system between ourselves as well as the CETA environment, and that we believe is now working. As a result, we've improved our performance against targets in relation to the presidential hotline complaints. Now, there are two areas that I want to raise in relation to that point. The first is that we, in our strategy, had said we will respond to all complaints within a 30-day period. But in broad terms, that is what we've given as a directive, and so we're sticking to that directive. But in practice, we realize that some of the complaints that arise are not within the realm of being finalized within 30 days. For instance, if I use an example, if someone has a query around issues of maintenance or any other issue in our environment, it may very well be that it will take a lot longer than 30 days to close that issue as an issue. And what we have not defined accurately for ourselves is what does respond within 30 days mean? Does it mean we acknowledge, we are working on it, we are giving you progress, or does it mean the case has actually been finalized, we have a file and the complainant is happy and walking away? And that is what we are now in the process and have, in fact, worked on and tried to clear that. So as a result of the 30-day target period, we have not met our target. We've performed 54% of the time as against the target that we had set for ourselves. But this is the one part we are happy about, is that we've made significant progress from the slow start that we started off with, where we were at 13% at some point, and then at 74%, we are sitting at 83% finalized cases from inception. I might add that unlike some comparisons where we only fare very badly as the Department of Justice when compared
against our peers in government, this is one area we're doing very well. And we just have to do well against our own strategy, but comparatively speaking, we are doing very well. We had a communication plan that we had set to implement, and it's incorporated as part of our strategy. And really our communication plan, even though it covers the whole business of the Department of Justice, but as I had already indicated, really our focus was going to be on the two issues again, which is in the maintenance environment and which is in the master's environment. And we've been very, very consistent. All our interventions have been around these two areas, and there's a reason for that. It's because through these areas we reach the majority of the South Africans who really have nothing to do with being in conflict with the law of any sort, but require services. And that is why we said all these other areas, we've been targeting health and court and all of that, but the areas of Africans, other than the ones who are in the legal system, that we need to address, and that is why we prioritize our work this way. In this strategy, we included the television series, we also included the radio series, and we included the media, in other words, print media, and also day-to-day interactions with people at our service point, as well as people who just come and ask questions specifically. We have had on the final verdict, which I'm hoping that the members were voting, a 26-part television series that was an education program, which we had dramatized, of course, and we had worked with ourselves, the MPA, sometimes other stakeholders who are not even in the justice sector to run that program. Justice on the Airwaves, we continued with that program, and we believe our reach was quite substantial insofar as that is concerned, because Justice on the Airwaves, our listenership was in excess of 1.7 million. The small issue that I just wanted to conclude on insofar as our communication is concerned is that we also started a Facebook page for our minister, and we believe he has got quite a good following, and if you haven't been following him, please follow him for interest. We try and see it happen now, but we are working towards that. But in addition, we've improved our own internal engagement processes in the department, which include, amongst others, and it's not in the report, but it includes, amongst others, regular engagement through the number of departmental... Yes, in terms of just communicating what is happening in the organization, we have quarterly releases which tell everybody what is happening in the organization. And what we've been considering as a department, and it's getting to a point of implementation now, is even on these areas that are very uncomfortable, because all along we've been communicating good things in these bulletins, even as well as in the setup process, even areas such as people that have been disciplined, and we have parted ways as a result of disciplinaries as well as misconduct and all of those things, as long as we have finalized the process in the department, we have been considering whether we do not want to put them there. So that all of us in the department as a deterrent can know who is doing us down when we are trying to improve our reputation and our image. And so it's something that in the medium term you must watch out for as Parliament. Now we move to some of the interventions that we did in here, and those would have been calendar based, such as during the Women's Month, we had a massive campaign around rights of women, and we partnered with South African Women Lawyers Association, SAWLA, and we always do this
work with them every year, and we are very, very grateful for this partnership, because this is where SAULA, together with ourselves, go out to the public and we draw wheels for people, we advise on how to access the space and those types of issues. We deal with issues of domestic violence during these periods, and these are the issues that are more prevalent with the people that we see. During the 16 days of activism campaign, we also give supplementary spread in the media to tell people about the means of combating gender-based violence and how people should deal with gender-based violence if they find themselves in those environments. We also, even as early as this year and the recent week, we had been publishing the information around the national register for sexual offenses throughout the country through various media. And we had also been on radio just to talk about that, following, of course, the Prince case and following all the interventions. And we must thank at this point Parliament for assisting us in addressing the outcomes of the Prince case. It really was swift and it did close the gap that would otherwise have been that would otherwise have created a very scene of chaos for the justice sector, and we really want to appreciate and thank you for that. In addition, we did a little bit of work on PRC in terms of tracing beneficiaries. If I say a little bit of work, it's a serious understatement with a lot of work. And as we reported yesterday, we were able to pay 446 transactions as a result of the investigations that PEC, which is our public education campaign, undertook. The minister also undertook the Izimbizo, which he is required and normally does anyway throughout the year. And the key of those in Izimbizo, the second one was the ABR environment that Hisham was talking about earlier in Filipi and a few others during the year under view. So we were very, very grateful because the responses that we received and some of the questions that arose during the ministers even being, we have been able to respond to, and most of them have also been responded to via the ministers' Facebook. We continue, honorable members, to educate and educate and educate some more. One of the areas that we have been educating on very extensively, and we have not reported on here because we had not put it in our action plan for the year, is the issue around violence that is motivated by the hate against people who are LGBTIs, the lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transsexuals, and that type of community. We've been doing a lot of education in this environment because we felt that it really was a lot of crisis in the country at some point. Maybe crisis is an extreme word, but it really created a lot of challenges for us. We believe that all the work that we are doing in that environment, at least from a communication point of view, is beginning to yield a positive response. We've seen a reasonable decline. We would like to see a lot more tolerance. So we are communicating on both fronts from just the awareness point of view, but we are also appealing for tolerance of people that are different towards us. Thanks. And I think that concludes the activities for Program 1. The next issue, according to the presentation, then talk to the budget for Program 1, which I request Mr. Johnson to finalize. Thank you.
Standing question. Dean, help us.
Thank you. Yes, if I may put them now, we ran out of time yesterday. The one pertains to your whistleblowing policy, which you dealt with yesterday. And the other is my question about the Office for Witness Protection. When I raised it with you earlier in the year, the fact that the law requires the OWP to reside under justice and not the NPA, you indicated agreement. The simple fact the law says the Office for Witness Protection sits with you. The reason why it's not supposed to sit with the prosecuting authority is that there may be intimidation of witnesses. But that office, in fact, sits with the NPA. The NPA's position earlier this year was that they would gladly be rid of it, and that was, in essence, repeated early this week. And so my answer is, have you done anything at all about it? The law says you must look after it. It is wrong that it's with the NPA. And I raised this with you early this year. I want to know what you have done about it. Then secondly, may I ask you about progress on a matter which thus far I have communicated with you privately, and I don't intend to use any names. You had the case in a certain region earlier this year, and I suppose last year, where an area court manager was selling bumps in the Department of Justice. The going rate was 7,000. No wonder our courts are in the condition they are in. I think that particular person and a brother ended up in court. But the allegation was in addition made by a whistleblower that a certain regional head, one of your regional heads of the Department of Justice, was aware of this, complicit in it, use any description you like, but certainly didn't act against it. And I have two questions arising. That whistleblower feels that, and you know her name by now because she has corresponded with you, feels that she's being victimized. Not one, but two, three, and maybe even four investigations have been launched against her by the same regional head. And I want your assurance that something is happening on the front. But the other more complicated matter is the regional manager herself, which is what I first brought to your attention. It was said that in the past, a number, again, something like not just one, but two, three, four, cases had occurred of misconduct or lesser charges, but disciplinary matters, being alleged against her, and nothing ever came of them whatsoever. As I understood it, you or someone did act upon this, and that Advocate Grubman, now retired, was in fact put in charge of an investigation into these allegations. And I would like to be updated, please, what happened after Advocate Grubman's investigation. Was action taken? Was the relevant regional head either acquitted or did disciplinary proceedings commence? And then most importantly, whether the whistleblower has been looked after. The two things are inseparable, of course. But she certainly feels that she is being victimized. And unfortunately, that is so often the case in South Africa, where despite all the protections legislated and otherwise, in the end, people's lives are ruined. So I would like your feedback on that. Okay, may I just ask you a question? Both yesterday and today, as part of the IT presentation, you made it clear that you take people's fingerprints for employment purposes and then run them against criminal databases. And I just want to ask you whether under the law, either as it stands or the one that will soon be signed into the law, the one that we have produced, you don't find a difficulty with that. What happens with the fingerprints once you run them against a criminal database? Are they immediately destroyed? And do you feel that you in fact have the right and the power to take such intimate biometric detail from a person? The Police Portfolio Committee has recently passed a law on fingerprinting to render it consonant with constitutional values. They decided to split off the matter of DNA and other biometric. But now that obviously was a statute intended for the police itself, and they would then be taking fingerprints, or under the CPA, if you take blood samples, you take that against suspected criminals. Here we are now beginning to take biometric details, ordinary South Africans,
in the course of something as normal and non-criminal as interviews for employment. So, I mean, I think all sorts of questions arise, and I really just ask your views on this. At minimum, do you immediately destroy those records, or do they promptly disappear into the SAP criminal database, which is constitutionally problematic?
Thank you very much, Professor. Let me start with the last question. What entitles us in law to take fingerprints, and what do we do with those post the interview process? Firstly, what entitles us is not the Criminal Procedure Act, but what entitles us is the security environment which requires the vetting of officials in terms of that legislation. So that is the first issue. Sorry, I can't recall it from the top of my head. It's, we will confirm that, but I do not wish to disagree with you, nor agree. All right. But the whole purpose of this is just purely on vetting for positions. It's perfectly done within an environment where a person is told that on two fronts. Firstly, that we almost, during interviews and during the interview process, one of the questions that a person gets asked as a standard question in all our interviews in the Department of Justice is whether a person has no criminal record, and if it is found that the person does have it, we will not proceed if they have not disclosed it. So it forces a disclosure of what from the individual. And in terms of the, I just don't recall the name of the form from the top of my head, but that's a standard public service form. When you apply, one of the things that you must see in that form is, do you have a criminal record? Tick the box. What was the criminal record? It's the 83, they tell me. Tick the box. Now, from there, see on the next process, where you then verify whether you do or you don't have the criminal record. And if we find that you do, we stop. Alright, and we don't proceed with you. If you have not disclosed it. If you have disclosed it, we try and wrap our heads around what was it that we were convicted of, or what was the criminal record for. I wish not to comment on that. but the truth of the matter is that we then look very cautiously, very guidedly. And that's all, because I can't invent a matter of fact, but we try and not to. But it doesn't mean that people will not live in the crack. So that is the one issue. Then I'll deal with the original, the housing region as the last response. This is the main issue. I do agree that the matter has been raised with myself. I do agree that we had some discussions even at the level of the minister, and I did say, look, what is required for us to manage right now, to manage witness protection, what is required of us as the Department of Justice, both in terms of knowledge and in terms of readiness, is slightly complex than our environment has in place. And it's not something we can just jump and do. We need to do a lot of readiness, both psychologically, because I'm not sure how to deal with that body, but certainly, technically, there are a number of things that we need to. And then beyond that, we will then do the excisement process. Remember that through this process, we will jump over the witness protection, that they're doing this work very well over a period of time. So there has been some fusion and integration of this business, both of our business the road and start to recognize it's in terms of the law, then instead of the law, we have to take it over. So given that we are really turning about, and I'm not able to say to the honorable member when and this honorable house when this will happen. But I will go back again and think a little harder and we will then provide some response. Now let me talk about the whistleblowing policy. The policy is indeed in place. Whistleblowers are protected to the best ability of the department. Naturally, the department does not have the best ability all the time, but we do protect the whistleblowers. In the specific case that the honorable member is raising, the colleague who has raised these issues would have realized that originally there was no protection given to her, so that there is no dispute about that. But I then, after communicating not just with the honorable member, but communicating with a number of people, for whom this matter has been reported, requested Dr. De Vere to provide or to deal with this issue in terms of just security. He did do that. He had a number of meetings because, even the judiciary has been brought into this issue. He had a number of meetings with the person concerned. There was an attempt to give her protection, the minimum protection she has, of course, when she is at the office. But we don't want to find out whether we can in fact protect her beyond the office. Because she continuously has been sending emails to pretty much everybody to complain that she feels unsafe. So, but my understanding and the report I had received from Dr. Bizier was the fact that she was not comfortable to be covered by security in her private life. Now, Dr. Devier, I'm not sure whether he's here now. Oh, okay, he's working on the TRC thing right now, response right now. So, but that's the information as far as I have it. I have since met with some members of the judiciary who were also concerned about this, and I gave them this feedback, and they also gave, because they were not aware, that we had engaged with her quite substantively on the issues of her security. But I think that's where I would wish to leave that aspect of the question. Even so far as the investigations that the honorable member has referred to, indeed we referred, in fact, Advocate Ratman was the last intervention. Again, when I wrote back to the Honorable House, I had referred the matter to the relevant person to whom this matter reacts from a reporting perspective. Now, since then, there was a lot of initially there was no movement in terms of the investigation, and then I requested that an investigation be undertaken, which will clear, because there are two things that we want to do. It's not only that when you investigate, you want to find a person guilty or find something, but you investigate with the purpose of first clearing if the allegations are true or false. Secondly, if they are true, then to do something about them. All of that has since happened. So all of that, there are all the additional contributions. In fact, Advocate Ratman was not doing an investigation. I really have to clarify that. He was going through all the reports that had been given and trying to verify certain level of information and the extent and the freedom and that type of thing. This is not in itself an investigation as you would go and start an investigation, as I understand it. That has been finalized. Now, he has made certain recommendations which I now must consider. Yes, that's where we are. And yes, that answers your question, ma'am. Thank you.
Just for me, KG, Saula, do they have a website? If they don't, not here in public, but if they could just provide me with their contact details of the case management their offices. I have in my constituency RAF matches for people who are indigent, and you don't want to deal with an RAF matter. It's so frustrating. It's just extremely frustrating. And I've reached the point, DG, where I want to take these people to somebody who can assist them legally. As a member of parliament, I'm just at the end of my tether.
Okay.
Well, I'll have to decide whether it's legal aid or Saula, and then take a second.
There's, by the way, another matter on which it would be useful to have a formal departmental host box or panel, and that's the ongoing matter of the lost trial records. Because my correspondence has now lessened, but I still get the odd thing. The latest is a real case at Madrid Court, Kempton Park. But is there a place? I mean, at one point I used to send them to the ministry, but it's rather endless. You think?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair. There was another question on the two people that were selling jobs. That we released. Mr. Lamin is present to give us the details as to the outcomes of those two people.
Thanks, Chair. The case referred to was reported to me by one of the principal interpreters, in Tembisa, and I approached two regional offices immediately after it was reported to assist with the investigating officers. And advocate Hisham Mohammed from the Western Cape provided me with an investigator. And from the particular process, we have already finalized 8 of the cases that were linked to the selling of jobs. We have dismissed 5 officials from the Johannesburg and 15 Market Street, including the court manager for 15 Market Street. The other brother who was in for TI also has been dismissed, as well as the area court manager for Johannesburg. So we are still left with one case that we are dealing with. Thank you.
Chairperson, we'll find the Saula information and we'll, before we leave the office. We'll not have it before the close of the session. Just broadly speaking, on the lost records, we have a project, Chair, just for your comfort. We have a project that has been led by the regional head, Gauteng, that deals with the ones that were lost and complaints have been filed because people want to appeal. So to the extent that those are a body of records. We have a project that is going on. We are able to report on it today because I do have a report. Now these will have come to us through the South African Human Rights Commission. Others would have come through us through the Public Protector, and that's the list. And then others, I think Mrs. Zamin had undertaken an awareness campaign with the various correctional facilities in her environment. So to the extent that all of those we've identified, we've worked on them, we've made significant progress in terms of those records. The numbers, of course, I will leave the report. I'm just now speaking from my mind in trying to respond to the trial records that are getting lost. But what we are thinking of doing is to really now begin to analyze in the department what is the magnitude of the problem. Is it just a problem that is limited to the Gauteng area, or is it the problem that is everywhere in the country? And what is the magnitude of that? I think that project is going to take us a little longer than we can make perhaps estimates here. I think we are going to go and work out a project plan. And find funding for it and try and understand the magnitude of the problem, if there is still a big problem. I know last year, and you would have picked up this problem because it penalizes throughout our performance target. One, it affects our year target that we are discussing right now, but it also affects the turnaround in terms of responses. It also, of course, has put us in conflict with the public protector, as has been evidenced by this morning. in relation to the South African Law Reform Commission. So it's really for us a big issue, but it's an issue that we've involved, and we are very, very grateful to the members of the judiciary that have come to the party to help us reconstruct in some instances where we were not able to find these records, as well as the prosecution, but also the legal profession, because they've also come to the party to assist us in some instances. But having said all the wonderful things, there is also what we are picking up, at least through this project, some level of opportunism as well, where because the weakness in the system that people are now coming forward and are saying, please, we can have applied. Remember that there are rules within which to lodge an appeal, and sometimes people are now not following that and are using this as a cheap and an easy rule. But in this group, there is a good body of genuine people whose records that we have misplaced. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to reflect on the numbers from the last time when we met in the South Gauteng High Court. At that stage, we had a total of 417 records that were recorded as missing, and the distribution of the 281 was a joint initiative between ourselves as the Department of Justice, the DPP for South Gauteng, as well as Legal Aid South Africa. 58 were complaints that we received from the Kudama private prison, which is in East Rika. 49 were received from the Johannesburg DCS, that is Correctional Services, and 29 from Everhead. And I can report that from the 281, we have already transcribed, successfully traced and transcribed 222. From the 58 that we received from Kutama, we have transcribed 55. From the 49 that we received from Johannesburg DCS, we found that 10 were incorrect case numbers, 9 were belonging to the different lower courts, and we have successfully traced 32 of those matters. From the 29 Everchat matters, we have transcribed 27, and we are busy with reconstruction of the 22. So in terms of percentage, if one has to attach a percentage to this particular project, one can safely say we are 93% to a competition. It's only 49 records that we have not finalized at this stage, and we are still continuing in the search from the 417 states.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the report. But what's actually worrying is the whole issue of transcribing and reconstructing, and one worries about the accuracy and legitimacy of the record in that sense, because from the meeting we had, it was as if we're going to take records from the lawyers and, you know, to try and put together new records for yourself. So I'm not sure whether there's any measure that you're actually utilizing to ensure that those records are accurate and legitimate.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I just need to explain that this process was dealt with up to the stage by four different service providers, starting with NELA, LOM, and now currently iAfrica. So it's not about getting information from the lawyer, but we have searched and found tapes, which tapes were recording or have recorded the actual court proceedings. So we are no longer using tapes. We have managed to get a service provider that has converted those tapes to DVDs and CDs. And the transcription part of it is utilizing the current service provider to take those DVDs and transcribe the information. So it's the original information that emanates from the court proceedings, but it was recorded on tape previously. But we now have the fully transcribed record. And the construction matters, so far we only have 4. And for that information, we'll be relying on the judges' notes as well as the advocate from the side of the DPP.
But as I'm saying, the search is continuing. You know, when we first reported this, we didn't even find the tapes, but we managed to get quite a number, large number of tapes, which has really assisted us in converting into CDs and DVDs. So the information is reliable.
Yes.
Just to put the member at ease, reconstruction is generally the last resort you can find. But all parties are then brought together to assist in the reconstruction of the case. It's the normal process that is being followed. But generally as a last resort, because your first prize is to really find the original record.
Yes, Mr.
Just one thing that concerns me is that you haven't mentioned the attorney for the defense. Surely they should also have input into the reconstruction.
Can I respond?
Yes, please.
Thanks, Chair. I have indicated that there are only four matters that require reconstruction. We have already met with the judge president because our first point of entry is to get the record from the judge who was presiding over the particular matter and also to get information from the DPP. So we had a meeting on the 9th of this month with the Judge President, Legal Aid South Africa, the DPP's office. So those are our key six stakeholders that will provide us with information that can assist with the reconstruction of the record. So once we have dealt with that, we will then engage the attorneys for this.
Were they represented by legal aid? No. They were, okay. Then, okay, fine.
Well, most of the cases, they are represented by legal aid. Thank you.
Did you?
There was a question from the honorable member who stepped out, but I feel maybe I should ask.
Absolutely
not. I thought I was taking advantage and answering it quickly. Okay. This was just to clarify, what does business mean when we say ICT called black business? You would recall that at some point when we're doing the review of the criminal justice system, there was in fact actually some people that were seconded from business to come and work with us. When I'm talking about business here, we mean people who are in the operation of the department. In other words, who are doing the business side of our business rather than the technical part. Thank you. Thanks.
All right. I'm trying to manage our time, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. I think we're about ready to receive a briefing on the budget outcome. Sorry? Yes. So, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairperson.
Wait. I appreciate your enthusiasm. Can we agree that we'll stop at one? No. That's the question I'm going to pose to Mr. Johnson. Four slides, all right. Then in that case, don't rush, take your time, but just understand that 1 o'clock I want us to stop, have a lunch break, and reconvene at 2. Put in your hands.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I would possibly make 5 observations. Yesterday we shared the major thrust of our course raises. But if we need to go on our tech court service, I mean the first program, administration. Administration is in essence a support service, and I would possibly want to highlight 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 things that would possibly raise questions. So we spend 1.8 billion on program administration. I'll give a bit more detail on what is all in administration. 1.2 billion on goods and services. But is there one line or two lines of interest there for you? You'll see there's a line called departmental agencies and accounts, 5 million. We pay the CETA skills levy, sub-CETA skills levy to them. And then another one, foreign governments and international organizations, 7 million, to make a contribution to the International Criminal Court, a perimeter treaty or amendment agreement, and annually we make such a contribution. One major line item that we spend money on, you can see machinery and equipment, and especially the equipment portion of it, This is for core security, as part of our core security infrastructure program. It was substantially more than in the previous year, but 229 million was the expenditure last year on this item. We can go to the next slide. Just to give you a year-on-year comparison, our personnel expenditure in this program increased 15% because there were more appointments in this program. But our goods and services and operational budget, and you can see the strength on our budget, there was a 4.9% decline in expenditure. One area of acknowledgement of our non-compliance, you will see departmental agencies and accounts, we didn't speak a cent of it because we didn't pay the CETA levies as prescribed, but we fixed it in the new financial year. You can also gain in this year 6.3 million rand was our contribution to the International Criminal Court. Third observation is you can do on machine and equipment, again court security instance, to 64 million, it increased the next year to 229 million. Next slide.
Did
the
you
next
say,
slide.
Did you say International Criminal Court?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, did the next slide give you a further unpacking of this 1.8 million? How much we spend on the ministry and the ministry support staff? 36 million. How much do we spend on executive management, executive directors, and upwards 43 million. Our corporate services, the corporate services is divided into, it's public education and communication, it is HR, it is finance, and for them, there we spend, and it includes security, 1.1 billion. In office accommodation, as I've broken it down to give you a sense of what expenditure there, it's 600 million. You can see for municipal recent taxes, 194 million is what we spent in the previous financial year, with some accruals as reported yesterday. Leases of office accommodation, 149 million. And for public service to render the service to us, you see a line for the accommodation charges, 257 million. So this is a unpacking perhaps, the various sub-programs of this program. The next slide, the last slide, is to give you a sense of the breakdown of the proportion and expenses. You will see lease fair payments, smaller portion, but the biggest portion, 565 million, relates to corporate payments, including security service of 565 million. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, well, that went quickly. Are there any questions on any members? You thought of one. Honourable Pilana Madam. On what?
Foundation 6 target chairperson is within his expenditure line item under program 2.
Yes.
We will see it when we do the court services presentation later. Tell me what the expense will be on buildings and fixed structures.
So they use the spending?
Yes.
No other questions, honorable members? In which case, we will move on to program 2. Provided, DG, we again we stop at 1.
Yes, I can bring up, the earlier, before the finances, the reference to lean management then is nothing to do with healthy eating and weight loss.
That's what, if you look at our entertainment budget as was published in the media, you will then realize how lean we have become. Okay, on program 2, I will move very quickly. The first slide there talks about the purpose of the program. Really, our purpose in this program is to resolve, support and facilitate the resolution of criminal, civil, and family law disputes by providing acceptable, efficient, and quality administrative support to the court and to manage the court facilities. And the last bit, Chair, is going to become more evident, and really we will need to spend a little bit of time on the management of court facilities slightly later in the presentation. We have six strategic objectives, including coordination of the JCPS cluster towards delivery of outcome 3, improved delivery of maintenance services, increased protection of rights of vulnerable groups, increased access to justice services by underserviced communities, or to underserviced communities, sorry, improved functionality of justice service points, as we've spoken about the service charter, and then improved the delivery of services at court level. Now we talk about just the progress that we have achieved in the outcome 3, which is all people in South Africa are and feel safe. We have, in fact, as the members would know, there are 8 outposts that we must report against, but not all of those outposts are for the Department of Justice. But we coordinate all performance in all 8 outposts because we are the reporting department. But the one that are relevant to for the purposes of this committee is the one on the finalization of cases in the record in the deadlock ROI. So the first bullet does talk about the criminal cases that are in the deadlock court ROI, and that we have a responsibility to ensure that we introduce interventions that reduce those cases as quickly as we are able to. And we have to explain what the backlog coverage is, so we are not going to go back and do that. But all I am going to say is that in the regional court as well as in the district court, that's where our focus attention has been during the year under review. And the reason for that was when we were looking at statistics, in effect as they may be, they began to tell us that that's where if we want to reduce backlog cases, that's where our attention should be, and that is where our focus then was during the period under review. Moving to the second bullet, in all the interventions that we then identified, including increasing the backlog size, we wanted to sustain those, and we continued to sustain the majority of those costs that are defined as backlog costs for a year, well, generally under review, as well as we are going to continue that process going forward during 2012-2013 financial year. During the period under review, we were able to decrease the backlog cases to 34,936,000 against the target, which is keeping them less than 37,034 cases. Now, what this means, because then here we have two issues. We have an English version interpretation and we have a mathematical calculation interpretation. So I'll take the English version one. The English version interpretation of what is happening is that year on year we must reduce what the closing number was for the year. And that purpose, if you were to take it and superimpose it to the mathematical calculation, you would come up with an obscene figure. Which I'm saying we were able to reduce these cases by 2,000 and some odd. But that's not what we did. In fact, we reduced these cases by a lot more to get to that number. And that's because in this time around, we have a little bit of a revolving number issue where some cases grow or better, so we're going to reduce, but you also have them coming in that type of thing. Now, from 2010, we had 4,878 cases, and about 12 cases. From 2010 to 2011, we had 40,000. In fact, it's tennis. And in 2012, we had the target of 37,034. And currently, we are sitting at the target of 36,495. Actual performance, 2009-2010, we came down from 31,000 to 38,000. from 11,000, we came down from 40,000 to 27,000. From 2012, we had 24,126 actually, the total of 37,034. And then in quarter one of 2013 financial year, we are sitting at 25,006 cases as against the target of 36,296. So if you think holistically, it seems as if we are reducing the ratio of death in the cost. But having said that, the reduction is not moving fast enough. Ideally, we ought not have backlog cases to begin with. So there is something that is fundamental that must happen. And at this stage, very briefly, I really want to reflect on what I said very positively yesterday, but as I mentioned that the Chief Justice is down in spearheading and even almost operationally driving the case management is going to yield results for us. And in fact, the improvements that I am beginning to say we are registering, we are then pretty much to that initiative going forward. If it can just be intensified at all levels, that wouldn't really be surprised for all of us in the criminal justice system. I then move to progress on activities in support of outcome 3, but where now the focus is to give you a holistic picture from the time when we had the inception of the personal cases in 2006, November, to the current period, which is March 2012, we have reduced the backlog by 59,232 cases, and that to me does reflect a reasonable progress. And that then is broken down into that slide year on year. We then move to one of our first projects for the next 3 years. The strategy is the maintenance turnaround project, which has a number of elements in it. The majority of the elements that we've been discussing over the past few days are on TPF, which is the last link, which is the paying on the accounting side. But there's an earlier side which we want to speak to now, which is the January the maintenance case is identified and registered in the system. So we've done a lot of work there. We've developed systems, the integrated case management systems, to increase service delivery and to enable us to promote, to track performance throughout the system. The second thing that we did was we capacitated and trained frontline staff to offer improved services. Now what does this mean? It means the different reports sometimes, not all the time, people experience when they go to court some of the issues that we are trying to deal with there. It's just the etiquette that our officials must deal with or must define in dealing with our stakeholders who are clients under these circumstances. But also, we must also educate and train on what would you do as a frontline staff if you have a problem that you're not able to solve. How do you mobilize people to come and assist you in resolving the problem so that the client does not come back or the member of the public does not come back to court because they did not get the information just held before they came to court. So we've done that training. But not only have we done the training, we also looked at process improvements throughout the maintenance value chain. So when we talk about lean management, this is how lean management is implemented incrementally and realistically. And we, just as somebody failed to mention, we, through this exercise, we've won ourselves a Department of Award, which is very unusual for the Department of Justice.
Thank you very much.
By just implementing lean management, we've joined club or speakers of organizations that have improved quite considerably over years, with relation to the buildings that and the like, and we want to be counted in the league. So that's what we are working for ourselves. The first issue is the turnaround in the payment of maintenance to beneficiaries to reduce incidences of losses, but also to build the portfolio of evidence. That we discussed in detail yesterday, so I will not discuss it much further now. During the 2024 financial year, we were able to achieve 65% of the products that we had granted to the landing, so 65% over this 100%, and the question will be why we will be able to answer the question in the succeeding bullet. The fifth reason for the delay was that really we were trying to procure the new management process that was going to assist us. We are really struggling, and we need to ask this a really sick call to explain what that means. New management defines the already remembered thing that we have conducted running around the government. New management is the project that we are doing pretty much with one organization, and that is the organization that is supported by the University of Cape Town.
Thank you.